This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Just even starting with us here this morning, and I didn't get a chance. So you are, what is your mug say there?
My mug says Utica Masjid, which is kind of the colloquial thing we go by over on Kemble Street. The official nonprofit name is the Muslim Community Association of Mohawk Valley. Imam Tom Fakini.
All right.
You're an imam. What's an imam in the Muslim community? An
imam's the equivalent of a priest or a rabbi, that the religious leader of that community give, you know, religious sermons, you know, lead prayers, conduct ceremonies, things like that.
Is there a specific place that you do that?
Yeah, at the actual mosque we have on Kemble Street. It's right near the parkway. Actually, it's a really nice facility. We built it from the ground up 2 years ago.
Yeah, familiar with it. It's beautiful.
For us, the best you can. What is Hamas? Is it a political party? What actually is it? We hear everyone talks about it, but I don't know if we really have a clear understanding of exactly what it is.
Good. Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked, because the first thing is that not every Muslim is an expert on Hamas.
Yeah.
I am not an expert on Hamas. I have no, I don't even know anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody.
And that's part of the conversation and the clarification that you want to make, I think, this morning, right?
I'm really important, especially when we take into account the fact that a six-year-old got stabbed 26 times yesterday. A Palestinian boy outside of Chicago, by the landlord, who came up and said that you Muslims must die, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about collective punishment and collective guilt, like, the way that we talk about this stuff matters.
And the FBI has talked about the increase of their intelligence and the reports of violence against those communities.
That's why I want to start with that caveat. Is that I have no idea, like, what it is Hamas. You know, my general impression is that if you go to most many movements that are armed movements, they have a political wing and then they have a military wing, right? Sometimes there's greater cooperation between those wings. Sometimes there's not. So I don't really know.
So you don't know if it is it a sect of the Muslim religion?
No. Okay. I can't answer that. It's not like a sect in the sense that they don't have a distinct set of beliefs that like would make them like different. However, like when it comes to your beliefs about what is allowed for you to do in the field of battle, now there's room for conversation there, because Islam says you cannot target civilians, you cannot fight or kill enemy combatants. So if, and I don't have any reliable information, so this is all hearsay, but if, for example, Hamas is coming out and saying, well, actually, no, you can do that, then that's not true. Then that would be something that's against the religion of Islam.
Just one more follow-up on this, because I'm intrigued by this, trying to understand this. Are all Hamas members also Muslim, if you know?
I would expect yes, because everybody in the Gaza Strip is Muslim. Except that's not true. There's a population of 1,000 Christians in the Gaza Strip that are also getting bombed and annihilated by Israeli shelling right now.
And I think the way I just see it is Hamas is a militant group that has some political governmental role in the Gaza Strip.
Yes, in 2006 they were elected democratically. That upset a lot of people. They also have a humanitarian wing, from what I understand. They build a lot of hospitals. They run a lot of schools. In a place like Gaza that has, you know, multiple refugee camps, that, you know, has, you know, horrible infrastructure, like, you know, it's a difficult situation for the average person in the Gaza Strip when your food and your electricity and your other things are being provided by a group that you may or may not agree with.
So to the extent that you may or may not know the answer to this, who would have been responsible for the attack on the Israelis attending the concert in the kibbutz?
Right.
Okay. We know that's what initiated this whole conflict, which is what Israel says is a war.
Uh-huh.
Who would have directed that to occur? I
don't know your specific question, but there's a possibility in these sorts of things that there's a lot of blame to go around. Okay, right? Because things don't happen in a vacuum, right? So you can talk about, we can zoom in on the details of the issue. And if it's true, and I say if it's true because the first casualty of war is truth. The first casualty of war is truth. And there's a whole lot of propaganda flying around on all sides.
Right.
Okay. And we've seen how, Sleepy Joe got in front of everybody and said he saw a picture of 40 babies decapitated. No, he didn't. It was a complete hoax. So everybody has to take a breather, and there's a lot of propaganda going around. It's hard to know what exactly to believe.
But the attack is not propaganda. That happened.
Well,
we know
I have something right here that says that one of the Israeli women that was present, her 44-year-old mother of three, Yasmin Parat, said that there was a lot of crossfire between the Israeli forces and Hamas, and a lot of the hostages died in the crossfire. yes, there was an attack, and an attack on civilians is wrong. Okay. But when it comes to responsibility, we know that in a situation of war, things are messy. Everybody's trying to make the other person look bad. And I don't know, is this something that was completely one side blame or completely both, like, or two sides were involved? And there's a larger context within which these things happen. Even if I disagree and I say, listen, Islam says you cannot kill civilians, you cannot kill enemy combatants, you know, and if it's true that Hamas is targeting enemy non-combatants, that's completely wrong. And I disagree with it. But it also exists in a larger context where people in Gaza have been cut off, blockaded for 17 years, from any, like, think about this. There was a humanitarian flotilla that tried to deliver services and food to Gaza a few years ago, and the Israeli Navy said, no, you got to go home. We're not going to have any humanitarian aid. They have their hand on the spigot when it comes to all food that comes in and out of Gaza, all electricity that comes out of Gaza. You saw how easy they turned off the water. I'm not saying that that justifies any sort of terrorist activity or any sort of targeting of civilians, but these things happen in a larger context. And that's why I try to tell people the occupation is the root cause of this issue. Even if I completely disagree with the tactics that Hamas uses, which I do, if it's true that they do these tactics, if you take away the occupation, you take away the justification and you take away a lot of these problems.
So Tom, what then, because I know this issue is very, very difficult and it's very, very hard. And for, I'm not sure what the reaction is for some of our listeners, but it's hard to hear views that we just had an assembly member Robert Smullen on talking about protecting the Jewish people at all costs in Israel. And we're their ally and we need to protect them from evil people in that part of the world and from being destroyed. Now, I understand there's, like you said, there's a context there. Yeah. There's more factors going on. So this conversation is really just not to advocate for one side or another, just right. I thought it'd be interesting to hear a representative of our local Muslim community. So before we get any further, I guess, into the historic global aspect of what's going on there, you live here, you're an imam at the Muslim Community Association in Mohawk Valley. What has been the local reaction by Muslims to what they see going on that's been brought to your attention?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things. First of all, we have a lot of Palestinian refugees in Utica. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of hundreds of Palestinian refugees in Utica. And a lot of them have been refugeed twice, right? They were kicked out and their homes were destroyed and their villages were destroyed in 1947 during the Nakba. And then they were moved into some of them were concentration camps, but they were refugee camps in Iraq. And then when the Iraq War happened, they were refugeed from Iraq and they came to Utica, right? So there's here we go again sentiment, right, from a lot of people. There's a frustration that, like, you know, I tried to say in the very beginning, that Muslims are always sort of targeted with suspicion and always asked to apologize and always asked to condemn things that we don't agree with. Mm-hmm. and groups that we're not a part of, right? And this is why, you know, I said, and I don't know if you saw the Rome Sentinel, but I was quoted in the Rome Sentinel in a YouTube video that I did. I was not interviewed for the piece because we missed the deadline. And unfortunately, it was presented as if it were an interview. It was not an interview. I was quoted. I said, we're tired of apologizing. We're tired of apologizing for things we don't do and things we don't support. You know, after 9/11, right? Denounce, condemn. Yeah, sure. Okay. And then Taliban and then ISIS and then Hamas. Every single year or two, something happens and there's a renewed environment of suspicion around Muslims. You know, my wife wanted to go out the other day. You know what I had to tell her? I just read the article about the 6-year-old boy getting stabbed. I said, you know what? Don't go out. Stay in. Because she has a hijab. She covers herself. What if someone wants to do something crazy? Right? There is an unfair atmosphere of fear and suspicion where Muslims begin to be targeted and it has real consequences.
Why doesn't the Muslim community then condemn the actions of the people like the Hamas? What?
That's because all you've been doing is condemning.
Wait a minute. But you can talk about justification for what they did. But we all saw it. There was an unprovoked attack on a concert. It came from Hamas. It came from Palestine. And these kids were out there just enjoying concert, and they get attacked. They went to the kibbutz, and they attacked families, and they killed families.
Right.
Now, these people who did that, we believe are Hamas. They are Muslim. You're saying we want to distance ourselves from these people.
And we do.
Why aren't you condemning those actions instead of justifying
You condemn the 26-year-old sorry, the 26 stabs that 6-year-old boy got yesterday outside Chicago, do you condemn that?
What I do, yes.
Okay, do you condemn the Israeli army using white phosphorus, chemical warfare against the civilians of Gaza?
I don't have a position on that.
You don't have a position on chemical weapons?
But nobody is condemned.
Well, I don't know if that's been, they've denied.
Let's say hypothetically, if. If they use chemical weapons.
But first
chemical
answer,
weapons on civilians?
First answer my question. No, question.
That's the point. I'm making you answer first because we're tired. Listen, this is a tactic.
You might be tired of being asked to apologize, but
getting Muslims to apologize is a tactic to distract against the oppression that we are suffering. It's a tactic. Okay, if you look at, we're not the ones using chemical weapons in warfare. Okay, yes, like we disagree. If Hamas is targeting civilians, we completely condemn that, and we have been condemning that. But the thing is, it's never enough. I can condemn it every single day. I condemn it in the mosque. I talk to my community. We statements, whatever. We've been condemning since 9/11 and before that. It's never enough. So tell me, what incentive do I have to keep condemning if even my condemnation isn't enough? Why would I keep on doing it?
Because
you would get annoyed too. If I came to you every single day and I said every single thing that happens to a Muslim, I said, do you condemn this? Do you condemn that? Do you condemn this? Do you condemn that? You don't understand. This creates an environment of suspicion around Muslims, and that's why a 6-year-old gets stabbed.
Because in the community, silence is construed as assent.
What
and
about
you
your
don't
silence?
Condemn it.
Why don't you condemn stuff that the Israeli government is doing? Yeah. Not the average, honest, innocent Israelis, the Israeli government, which the Israeli people are in protest against. They're protesting against Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. They want him out. You know, it's like this is not a Muslim-Jewish issue.
And some Palestinians and Muslims do live amongst the Jewish people in Israel, right?
They do, right? This is an issue of the tactics of a government. A government, and if you, I don't know if you follow Candace Owens on Twitter, but she posted something, she tweeted something the other day. It was very, very interesting. She said, okay, everybody says, yeah, we have to stand up for our allies. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, but what if there's an ally that the ROI is very, very low and stops making sense. What's the United States?
That return on investment.
Yeah, the return on investment. Yeah. You know how many times the United Nations has condemned Israel for violating its rules? 78 times. 78 times. They've used chemical weapons. They're destroying villages. 50 in the past week, okay, since they've been shelling Gaza, 50 families have been removed from the civil registry. I didn't understand what that meant the first time I read that. I had to think about it. That means LaDuca, Fakini, people with your last name. Imagine you had a family reunion. Imagine all your brothers, all your children, all your cousins, all your uncles, all your aunts, all your grandparents. The whole family tree removed. Every single one of them dead. Children, women, whatever. And you want to tell me that this is justified? That's ridiculous.
Well, now looking at that issue, and I think throughout history, there's a lot of religion has fueled a lot of divisions and genocide to some degree and killings. And when you bring it to the modern era and you're talking about why is the Muslim community asked to apologize for all of this all the time? But maybe my perspective, and I'm just looking at this, is that when you look at the headlines, I know historically, everybody's been guilty of everything, all of the civilization. That's the way the world developed. But when you look at modern history after 9/11, the headlines I see of beheadings, of militant groups, of all the bombing back and forth is usually within Muslim communities. So I don't see I'm just trying to make a point of what I observe in the news, the media coverage of Christians leading attacks into families like that.
What is it about the
Muslim religion that seems to be associated with these militant groups that keep making horrible headlines?
Here's the thing I can't understand. Okay, we know that politicians lie, right? We know that the media lies, right? Then why all of a sudden do we believe everything they say? Do you think that the CNN actually tells the truth? Right? Are you uncritical of everything that CNN says?
Well, I know more of what I see. I mean, I've seen the beheadings
But things are presented in a context. You guys know that. You're in media, right? You can spin something or you can select or you can omit. There's all these types of strategies. Okay. So I'm not saying that these things didn't happen. I'm saying that when somebody else does it and it's not reported on, and then the only person it's reported on is the same type of person, then that's a narrative. And that's a decision that media makes. I literally saw with my eyes a video of someone in Gaza carrying their 8-year-old child with no head, lost their head in the bombardment, right? Is that not a beheading, right? have we not, if you go to certain African nations, there have been Christians that attack Muslims, like in similar ways with beheadings. If you go to Myanmar, how many Burmese refugees do we have here? Talk about, who talks about Buddhist terrorism, right? There are Buddhist monks. There are Hindus in India that have beaten Muslims to death and beheaded Muslims. Why isn't Hindu terrorism, why isn't Buddhist terrorism a thing? Because this is a narrative that the media has been pushing for a long time. I'm not saying that those things didn't happen, that Muslims don't commit atrocities. They do. And we're upset about that, and that makes us very angry, and we try to do whatever we can to speak out about that. But when it's presented in an unfair and imbalanced way, it becomes a narrative, and people die like that six-year-old boy, right? This is my point.
How should the Israelis have reacted to this attack?
The Israeli government should follow international law.
Okay, but be specific. What should they have done?
They should not use white phosphorus or chemical weapons if they are using it. Right. If they wanted to do an actual evacuation of North Gaza, right, which was issued with a 24-hour deadline on roads that they had already bombed so that they were unusable, then they would invite outside observers to make sure no war crimes are going on. Right. They would not use the human shield argument to just use it as a justification for killing everything that moves. Listen, here's the thing that cracks me up is like you have in you see this. On CNN, there have been active Israeli military personnel on camera saying that we're going to go kill civilians. They're saying that we don't differentiate between Hamas and civilians. And you're looking at me.
Civilians as collateral, not saying that they're purposely going to target civilians.
We're not going to make a difference. We're not going to differentiate. That's if there's a 93-year-old woman, oh, I can show you. I keep receipts.
I watched the IDF director, and he said, we do not target civilians. We are targeting Hamas, their military operations, where they have their wars. And they show in the Gaza, in the North Gaza, everywhere they've bombed, and they have these, they had it designated. They said these are all areas where they believe that there were military weapons or a military group. Well, that's what they're targeting. Now, are there people who are going to be, is there going to be collateral damage? Yes. But I want to ask you this.
That's different.
Hold on. What I asked you, you didn't answer.
I hope they get on the same page because there have been military personnel. Maybe that one was saying something different. There have been military personnel on CNN. I've watched it that have said we're not going to differentiate between civilians and whatever. I hope they get on the same page.
But get back to my question. How should Israel, you told me what they shouldn't do, but what should Israel have done? How should they have reacted to this thing, this attack on these concert goers? What should they have done in response to that?
That decontextualizes.
Do you have an answer to that or not?
Yeah, I do have an answer.
What's the answer?
First of all, you can't decontextualize it from the situation of occupation. If they're serious about not wanting to fuel even unjust and wrong like terrorism, you have to take steps to end the occupation. Like if Israel has the right to exist, Palestine has the right to exist. The West Bank and the Gaza Strip has a right to exist. Lift the blockade, right? Whatever. Specifically, when it comes to a theater of war, all I ask is that people follow the international law. It's not that hard, right? If you're going to give people, if you want to evacuate a people and like actually let them evacuate, you don't give them 24 hours. You don't give 24 hours for over 1 million people to leave and get to a place that's already sort of like, it's all, like you don't understand. Gaza is an open air prison. It's a prison. It's surrounded by walls and the sea, the Mediterranean.
So what are they really trying to? And I think in our modern history, when you look at what the United States has done in some of these, that there is generally a deliberative process that allows all this to unfold before bombs start flying. Yeah. And there is a lot of notice in many cases given to those places to evacuate because it's not, at least as I've seen, even after 9/11, the effort was to try to target the enemies that were doing this.
Right.
The last thing the United States wanted to have on its record sheet is wiping out innocent people. That hasn't always been the case. But I think when you look at these wars, they've been handled, as I see it, a lot differently than what just unfolded now. But in terms of Israel's fight, and it does bother me, I understand all perspectives on this, but it does bother me when you see innocent children and families being killed because I don't know what the answer is. I don't know, to Mark's question, what Israel should have done differently when Hamas's role is to do exactly that, use innocents and families to try to infiltrate and protect themselves. And if that's the weapon, the means by which Hamas tries to avoid being attacked and killed is to use innocents as shields, then how do you get around that?
Right. Well, here's the thing too. Both sides do it. And that's something no one talks about. The Israeli government, they use their settlers in order to shield them and provide them justification to attack and have these reprisals on Palestinians as well. Okay, when it comes to some of the settlers, and this is crazy because it's like if you actually know Palestinians in the Palestinian community, people still have the keys to their houses, right? It's like the Bosnians. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like they left their home in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, depending on like when, and they actually still have the keys to their houses. And some dude from Long Island, right, went over there and he's given military training and he has a weapon and he takes it over, right? Like, it's just like insane, like the situation. And then what will happen is like I watched again with my eyes, like a video of an Israeli settler, you know, who was being confronted by Palestinians with no weapons or whatever. He was trying to take over their land and he got a little bit of distance. He pushed off and he shot him, you know, point blank. Right. So there's an unfortunate situation that the United States should hold Israel accountable for. Okay. And I don't believe in blank checks when it comes to like, I'm an America first guy. Okay. It's like, nobody gets a free ride. Right? If you're going to have an ally, they got to follow the rules. Right. Like, do you know that we spend four times as much money funding Israel's military than we do on food stamps? Four times, $13.1 million a day.
Should the
checks.
Should hostages be released?
Of course. Hostages should always be released. I don't believe taking hostages. It's like
immediately.
Yeah. Immediately. Both sides. Both sides.
Tom, and I know this may be hard to answer. We're running out of time, but yeah. I guess just, and I think you did a great job explaining your side. You're, you know, making some points. Does this really just continue to go back, you know, over 50 years? And I'm sure, obviously longer, but maybe the last real occupation of Israel and the West Bank and the continuation of the livelihood, the threats of the livelihood and the homes and even the control on those people?
No, 100%. I mean, this is the thing. You have to fix the root of the issue. You're not going to solve it if you don't fix the root of the issue. If you had to go to Syracuse for work every day and you had to pass through 8 checkpoints with armed guards and fences, like you were going through the airport and then, but maybe they turn you back, right? This is the average life of an average Palestinian in the West Bank, right? If you had to live like you had to live in Gaza, you know, like you wouldn't be able to tolerate it and you would be pretty angry at people telling you exactly how you should be reacting. And I'm not saying that their reactions are always appropriate.
Right.
But I'm saying that you have to fix the root of the issue.
Yeah.
If Israel as a country, if they have a right to exist, great, no problem. But if it was established unilaterally, right, without everybody on board, you're only going to keep having these problems. I don't know what the solution is. That's not for me to decide. You know, Palestinians and Israelis have to figure it out. Those conversations should actually be facilitated in a genuine way, not in a way where people agree and then don't fulfill their agreements. That's happened a lot in the past 20, 30 years too. But when it comes to actually the way forward, you have to solve the root of the issues. Get everybody at the table, have everybody talk about how can we move forward? What can we do to make it right? What can we do to make it right? Like, if you don't solve the root of the issue, these things are just going to happen.
And it doesn't help. How much of the root of the issue, just quickly before we go, how much of the root of the issue is Iran, which is a bigger fish in this fight? I think you can debate whether they were involved in this incident or not, but they've clearly been supporting the groups and militants and Hamas and Hezbollah over there. And if Iran is using those groups to do all the dirty and bloody work, we got a bigger problem.
Yeah, definitely. They are a factor, but they also like to take credit for more than necessarily that they're responsible for, because it makes them look good, right, for their side. Okay. When it comes to Iran's involvement and anybody else's involvement, right, it's like it's just giving them fodder, right, to make things harder on the Palestinians. You take away any reason to try to court, you know, Iranian backing or funding or whatever if you solve the root of the issue. Okay, if you actually have Israelis and Palestinians trying to work it out together, then no one's going to involve outside parties. No one's going to look for like these sorts of shady alliances. You know, like you can't solve the thing without the root of the issue. And that's the thing that I hope everybody keeps in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tom Fekini in studio with us here this morning. Tom, great job, Imam. And Tom, go ahead, give us the listeners the information about where they may see you and the mosque again.
I'm around town. We're on Campbell Street, right? We're right near the parkway. And I'm somebody who I'm open to conversation. You know, I'm born and bred. My family's been in this country since 1905. You know, like I'm not going anywhere. This is my country. You know, like people, you know, just let's have a conversation. Yeah. I believe in being critical. You can dislike Islam. You can dislike Muslims. I don't care, but be consistent. That's all I want from people. I want people to be consistent.
Be fair.
I try to be consistent, and I expect the same from other people.
That's fair. That's fair. Part of the Muslim Community Association, Tom, always welcome. Please, if there's anything that we can do as far as conversation facilitation, maybe bridging any kind of gap, bringing the community together or furthering these conversations, you're more than welcome. Come on in, all right?
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You got it. Anytime. Stay with us. 9 o'clock, Talk 100.7 FM.